Good morning! This is Steve from Draft Politics, and you're listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
Good morning! Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for October 15th, 2019. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Sleepy Chip Hassenflow, Steve.
Just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. If you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. You're sleepy. Is the weather?
No, it's because we're recording in an evening time, Steve.
Oh, it's busy time of year. You're going to be away. I'm going to be away. So we have to sneak in. We've never missed a Tuesday. Do you know that?
We have yet to miss a Tuesday.
In 5 years plus, we've never missed a Tuesday to release a new episode of Too Much Scrolling, even when we have to record late at night.
Well, regardless, this is actually really early in the morning, Tuesday morning.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's the way we work.
Of course it is.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You got a chance to see the Judy movie, which has nothing to do with Twin Peaks.
Judy.
Yes.
This is about Judy Garland. And I wanted to say, this opened up in our area a week before, but it was only showing at a couple theaters.
Very limited release.
Sure. So it did start showing the following week at my local theater that I usually go to. And I thought I was going to have a private screening, Steve, but I didn't. I had an older couple come into the back, and they all went all the way to the back. And they put a blanket over themselves, Steve. I think they were enjoying the film.
There's a lot of people that enjoy a lot of different kinds of film. And this story,
they were enjoying the film, Steve.
This story about Judy Garland certainly has a lot of fans. There's a lot of fans of Judy Garland.
Yes, there was. There was me,
friends of
me,
Judy.
Me and the two people behind me.
Yeah.
So I had a private screening for the most part. For those people who enjoyed Judy Garland,
mm-hmm.
I think that they will get some insight. This is about the later part of her career. This is what you should know. She's uninsurable at this point. She is not reliable to show up on set. Mm. She's not reliable to do work. So she can't be insured, which means she can't get jobs.
Mm.
Her marriage has split up. Her children, for the most part, are homeless with her. And so she's going to leave her children with the husband or the ex-husband.
Wow.
And she has got work, the place that they will give her work, which is over in London.
Okay.
So she heads over to London, and what she is going to do is give a performance very similar to how someone does a residency at, you know, Las Vegas, mm-hmm. or someplace like that.
Okay. Britney Spears,
exactly. Mm-hmm. I was thinking, or Celine Dion is okay. What more like it. She gets over there, and you're getting some backstory. So we get some flashbacks to her youth. She's working for MGM. MGM's president or CEO is scaring her to death. She's working 18 hours a day,
wow.
You know, 16 hours a day, certainly without a lot of breaks. I understand filming is a lot of hours all at once because the film's got to be done.
Right.
But there really is no break for her. She has to sleep, you know, on a board. I don't know if you know this, she's kind of sleeping up. You don't want to mess up your hair.
Wow.
She is not allowed to eat during this time. She takes pills. She takes pills to go to sleep. She takes pills to wake her up. They have a lot of photo ops. There's a scene where she's doing a photo op with Mickey Rooney.
Mm-hmm.
They're over hamburgers. She is not allowed to eat the hamburger.
Mm.
And so what we're seeing is that there was a budding romance with them, but they have no time for that. She, at this point, is going to go over and she's going to give these performances. She's going to sing for people. And I think there was a lot of recordings of this. And this is where Renee Zellweger is going to take her show. To get her on stage is a real feat. She's having panic attacks. She's got anxiety. She's drinking herself into a place to allow her to get out there. But many ways, once you've pushed her out on stage, she's Judy Garland. She
right.
is there to perform.
Yeah.
But during this time, you know, you can't live like that. You kind of fall apart a few times. And that's ultimately how she gets fired from this, this gig that she needs. She needs this because she is penniless. All our money is tied up in legal battles. One of the most touching scenes of this entire film was there was a gay couple, two men who basically bought tickets to every one of her shows. And one evening she's leaving the theater. She needs to be grounded. She wants to feel like a regular group. She runs into this couple and they look at her and they say, Judy, we love you. Thank you so much for coming to sing. And she says, well, why don't we go to dinner? And as you can imagine, if you know someone who was your idol came out and said, let's go to dinner, mm-hmm. you would think of the greatest places you could find. But it's late at night in London. There's nothing open. So they go from one place to another, and they're like, well, I thought they would be open. They eventually wind up back at their apartment, this couple's apartment. And of course, what are they going to do? They're going to put the greatest thing they can put together. They're going to put some eggs together. And of course, he's going to use too much cream because, you know, I've got to make them special for mm-hmm. Judy Garland. Well, it turns out to be runny junk. And, you know, the whole time they're kind of laughing about it. She's incredibly gracious about this because, once again, what she's looking for is to be grounded. She wants just a regular night.
That connection to a regular life, a regular person doing regular person things instead of this life that she's lived.
Now, I don't know if you know this, Steve, but a lot of homosexuals enjoy Judy Garland.
Friends of Judy is a big thing in the theatrical community, I'll tell you that much.
Well, in fact, it could be any type of singer. It could be Celine Dion or
Britney Spears.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Barbra Streisand, whoever that, the current version of that is. Mm-hmm. But anyway, one of the gentlemen falls asleep on the couch, and the other guy just kind of sits down at the piano. He's kind of playing an old standard, mm-hmm. and it just means so much to him to sit there and play for Judy. And Judy sits up and she sings for him. Mm-hmm. So it's a one-on-one, incredibly touching. He tells the story of his partner basically having to go to jail. For being a homosexual and how the rules have changed. So it's an idea of being, you know, grounded in a time. And if you think, you know, 100 years earlier, maybe Oscar Wilde went to jail mm-hmm. For this. But anyway, the rules had changed. But still, you know, they lived in a very modest house. And they have, you know, what they felt was the ultimate, Judy Garland, right there with them. And it really was a very touching scene how they connected. They eventually connect again at the end, and I don't want to give all the ending away. It's well known anyway, mm-hmm. but she's kind of falling apart, and he gets to stand up and kind of help her move to the next level. She eventually gets fired, and she has to go home. And what we learn is she dies just a few months after mm-hmm. these performances. Steve, she was 47 years old.
Wow.
She was... I mean, that's a young adult now.
Yeah.
That certainly isn't, you know, you think she's much older. She was 47 years old. And ultimately, she is a product of some abusive relationship, or a mentally cruel situation. That, you know, do you participate in Hollywood? I mean, is it worth it? I think you have to ask yourself, was it worth it? For her, she, you know, depression baby, poor.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This is where you're going to have to leave this. One of our most glamorous people, certainly struggling. Anyway, I really enjoy this. I would say 65 out of 100.
Okay.
Good stuff.
You would suggest this for people who want to look at this era a little bit, maybe?
This is a grown-up film.
Okay.
This is a grown-up film. And I think if you, this is a, has interest to you, Renee Zellweger does a great job. They've got a nice cast here.
Okay. You also got to see a very silly movie, Isn't It Romantic? This is the Rebel Wilson, Adam Devine, and Chris Hemsworth movie.
Steve, this does star Rebel Wilson and Adam Devine. Seems like the power couple.
Yeah.
They did do some singing in this,
okay.
just so you know.
Of course.
And, of course, Thor Odinson was also.
Thor Odinson.
Yes.
Is that a Scottish guy?
Well, no. He's Thor Odinson. I think he's Australian. So, anyway, Thor was also in this. This is a very good movie. This is about a lady who hits her head and wakes up in a romantic comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And learns a little bit about herself during this entire ordeal. It is very funny. It is very much Pretty Woman making fun of it. And I think that many people will enjoy this. This was released, I think, January of this year.
Okay.
So certainly if you want something light and you wanted to watch something that's fun and it's a date movie, I think you'd find plenty of humor in here.
I don't think you can go wrong with Rebel Wilson. I think just about all of her movies are pretty much very similar. Just, hey, look at Rebel Wilson. She's fun. And then silly things happen around her, I think.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Then, to finish the trifecta of your movies, you saw the very dramatic, very sad, the very silly, and then the very psychotic movie American Psycho from 2000. This is coming up on 19 years old, this one.
And it starred Bruce Wayne. I think this was before he became the Batman, Steve. I don't know. I don't know. But he was there.
Christian Bale, yeah.
Bruce Wayne.
Right. Right.
So anyway, this is a very interesting film to watch after I watched Joker last week.
Really?
Because they kind of mirror each other quite a bit.
Interesting.
The difference is that Christian Bale's character is a very wealthy person. He's a very connected person. He certainly lives a life that many of us would want to live. He's got the abs we all want to have because he works on them so much. He every morning he's got a ritual to make sure his skin is just right as he washes his face and uses masks on him and all sorts of fun stuff. But what we learn is he's slowly cracking, and he is a psychotic killer.
Mm.
Ultimately, he starts killing a whole bunch of people, and the body count starts going up. And there's a gentleman that he's competing with that he decides he's going to kill this gentleman too. So by the end of the movie, he is falling apart. He calls his attorney and says, hey, listen, I killed all these people. And that's where the interesting part, and this is where the Joker movie of last week that we reviewed kind of comes beat for beat. It's different, but a beat for beat. Because the next day, Christian Bale, who is certainly under distress, shows up at this apartment for the gentleman he killed, and everything is cleaned up.
Mm.
There are no dead bodies there.
Mm.
The place is for sale. It's been painted. It looks fresh. It looks good. So he heads over to the bar where the attorney's at and all of his friends are. And he says, you remember that part where I called last night and I told you I killed this person? And the guy who's the attorney looks at him and said, I know, you're such a jokester. He goes, no, I really killed all these people. He goes, I know, you're such a jokester about that.
Wow.
And then he goes, no, I really killed him. He goes, listen, I'm feeling kind of uncomfortable with this. I'm going to step away. And at that point, you realize what's going on is all of a sudden, he can get away with that. So he sits down at the table with his friends, orders a drink he would normally have, starts working into the banter and going back to his life as it was before he revealed this information. And as that's going up on the TV, Ronald Reagan comes on, and Ronald Reagan is giving a speech. I don't know if it's the Iran-Contra speech or something of that nature, but it basically is a commentary on how privilege potentially could lead to people being able to live a life and get away with things that normally other people couldn't get away with, just because there is an air of superiority or a wealth or the ability to have it sugarcoated given to you. This is not a beat for beat with the Joker. Joker's different, but it certainly used a very similar type of ending to kind of give it away. I thought, I had never seen this movie. I knew I should watch this film, and I'm glad I did. It certainly is dated, though, too.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
19 years. I mean, a lot of stuff has changed, but...
The Joker's already died, Steve.
Uh-huh. So Christian Bale can go on and not worry about that, because Bruce Wayne doesn't have to worry about the Joker.
Bruce has gone off, too, Steve.
Yeah.
I think he's hanging out with the Catwoman. That's what I think's going on.
And they're having kids.
They're having kids.
That's right. I got a chance to see a Batman story of my own. This is Batwoman. This started on the CW this week, and it is another one of those CW superhero shows.
All right, so when you say shows, this is a television show.
Yes.
And the CW is a network television.
Yes, this is a network. This is like the independent sort of network for the Warner Brothers DC universe.
Sure. And this is a modern Batwoman that was created, I don't know, maybe less than 10 years ago.
Correct. The 52 is where she came in. Those series of comics where they kind of rebooted the DC universe, and Batwoman came into this. She is Kate Kane. She, in this TV show, she is Bruce Wayne's cousin, where in the original comic book, she was Bruce Wayne's aunt because of family relations. It makes more sense to call her a cousin in this show. She's played here by Ruby Rose, who you might know from Orange is the New Black.
Okay.
And she does a fantastic job
explaining. So she's out of prison.
So she's out of prison, yes.
With Piper.
Ruby Rose does a fantastic job convincing the audience here that she is a real strong human, that she could very well be the next superhero. Batman is not an alien. Batman is not, he doesn't have any amazing powers. Batwoman here isn't any of those things either. She is just a powerful character who believes in things very strongly and thinks she can change the world through vigilante means.
Okay.
And that's exactly what happens. It's pretty predictable, as you might expect Batwoman to be. The unpredictable part is that Kate Kane is an openly gay superhero. She is in love with a woman in the previous incarnation before she goes away for her big bat training, and then she comes back and finds that love triangle that we love in TV shows to be very complicated because the woman she fell in love with has married a man. And
well, welcome to 2019.
Welcome,
Steve,
to 2019 and the CW, because certainly we have some issues to talk about.
Oh, there you go.
This is very good. I like this very much. Lucius Fox's son, Luke Fox, is the tech guy for Batwoman. I look forward to their interactions. That actor seems to be very good at putting together who that character is. There's some really great shots of Chicago in this series. Gotham City.
Well, we knew Gotham City and Chicago have a lot in common, Steve.
Very, very similar. They look a lot alike. Like, oh, look, they're in Lower Wacker Drive again. Huh.
Wacker-ish.
Wacker-ish. Gotham. Lower Gotham Drive. Got it. This, I look forward to this. It's a very intriguing pilot. I look forward to the characters are going to develop in this. The critics have been really kind on Rotten Tomatoes. It's at about 70%. The audiences have not been quite so kind. The Rotten Tomatoes score from audiences is below 10% right now.
Well, that seems to be challenging.
It does, because critics certainly don't pay the bills. The audience who's watching these shows and watching the commercials, they're the ones who are going to keep this going. We'll see what happens. They're going to tie this into the rest of the DC universe. Okay. On the CW. There's a lot of fans of Arrow.
Do you watch a lot of these?
I don't watch a lot of them. Generally, they don't appeal to me. Mm-hmm. They are, I think, designed more for my students. Okay. I think they're aimed for a younger demographic. And more a female demographic, I think.
Okay.
I think that these are more soap opera than adventure stories most of the time. This one hit just right for me. I will watch episode 2 of Batwoman on Sunday.
Hi everyone. This week I watched, among other things, The Perished, which is the second film from Irish filmmaker Paddy Murphy, and premiered at Frightfest in August of this year. As we all probably know, abortion is still a hot topic in Ireland, and The Perished makes light of that with the difficult-to-watch story of Sarah, who is young, in love, and made a mistake. And after being shunned by her family and undergoing a trip to terminate in Liverpool, starts to be haunted whilst recovering in a parochial house in rural Ireland with her best friend. Obviously it's a dark topic, but it's one that actually works very well for a horror film, blending monsters with social commentary in a way that George Romero would approve of. The plot is very much grounded in the realities of what happens with an accidental pregnancy for a lot of women, whilst also managing to build and twist into something not only uncomfortable and sinister, but also otherworldly. Possibly not for the screamish, the creature effects in The Perished are pretty impressive for the budget, and they show a lot of imagination and skill, as well as tugging my heartstrings for being practical effects rather than CGI, as people who've heard me before will know. The cast and set are small, but they're well used. The characters are three-dimensional and layered rather than just being straight good or bad heroes and villains. And the setting adds to this feeling of loneliness and claustrophobia that the lead character Sarah is suffering with following her termination. The Parish is a creepy and topical film that makes you think, with a tight script and plenty of emotion. Part social horror, part creature feature, this ticks all the boxes for something a bit different, and definitely worth watching for Halloween. As always, if you want to hear more ramblings about film, geekery and more, you can follow me on Twitter, at Films with Stacey, where you can also find a link to my website for longer film and TV reviews. Until next time.
Opening this week, there's some things that we might watch. The first movie is called Jojo Rabbit.
This is Taiki Waititi.
Wow, you said that.
Did I say it correctly?
I don't know if you said it correctly, but you said it. Good job.
He was a gentleman. Well, first of all, he's a New Zealander.
Yes.
Who is, he did Thor's last film. Uh-huh. He's a very, very funny guy. He also has done a number of comedies that all you have to do is look him up. Every one of them is bizarrely fun. And this one seems bizarre. And potentially fun, and potentially strange.
His voice is so interesting. He was the voice of the one character in the Thor Ragnarok, which then passed into...
Yeah, man. Talking more.
Into the Avengers movies.
Looks like the Thing, but he's not the Thing, man.
Right. The not Thing Thing.
Yeah, he's a rock guy.
I have high expectations for what he can bring to us.
Yeah, we didn't say anything about this film. This is a film about a little boy growing up during before World War II started.
Right.
So in between World War I's end and World War II's start, uh-huh. His imaginary friend is Adolf Hitler, Steve.
Like the Adolf Hitler. Like,
yeah, played like by Taiki Waititi.
Jeez.
So this is bizarre.
Uh-huh.
We're going to have a lot of bizarre films that we're going to talk about.
It is Bizarre Film Week.
But let's just say this one actually looks very interesting. And
funny. There's some funny things that are happening in this movie.
Well, Steve, what could be funny about World War II? Let's find out.
He finds out that his mother is hiding a Jewish girl in their home. And this...
Gesundheit.
This leads to all sorts of funny, interesting situations. I look forward to Jojo Rabbit. I think this is going to be a good one. We also have the sequel to Zombieland finally coming out this week, Zombieland Double Tap.
Well, we have the rules on what to do when we have to when we run into zombies, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
Always wear your seatbelt. That's one of the ones I always to remember. But this one may or may not be fun. Let's just say that this one is going to be the one that I think most people are thinking is going to be the biggest film
mm-hmm.
of the week. But there's a lot of other films to watch, and they're much more bizarre.
I have high expectations for Zombieland. I hope that it's as good as the first one. The first one was so good. I hope that this one is as good.
Well, Mark Zuckerberg is a great actor, and I'm sure he's going to do very well.
He's great in this. So is the kid from Cheers.
Woody.
There's a movie called Greener Grass coming out. This is a bizarre look at suburban life.
Yeah, so what is the film I'm thinking of? It's the film that...
Edward Scissorhands.
No. What was the film with the wives? Stepford Wives.
Okay.
There's something very bizarre going on in this town with a lot of colorful shirts.
You should watch this trailer. This trailer just hits you over the head with all of these weird things that are happening in this normal, quote-unquote, town.
The one lady says, can I have your baby? And she goes, sure.
Sure, here you go.
Anyway, it is bizarre. This looks interesting. I look like I'm going to watch this.
Yes, I'm going to find this one. There is a movie called The Lighthouse. This is a story about New England and two lighthouse keepers in the 1890s.
This is filmed like it's an old-time film.
Mm-hmm.
It stars Harry Osborne, Steve. And I don't know if this was before...
And that vampire...
Yes. I don't know if this is before he became the Green Goblin or after. But yes, this stars...
Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson.
That's right. Let's go, team. This is the...
Line.
That's right. This actually looks very, very good.
It really does. It surprisingly looks good. Go look at the trailer for The Lighthouse. Maleficent, Mistress of Evil, the sequel to Maleficent, is coming out this week.
No one was looking forward to this, but it's there.
I'm sure plenty of people. There were lots of people who liked the original.
This is Angelina Jolie.
Yeah, and Angelina Jolie will sell some tickets.
Well, certainly very beautiful, and there is certainly a look to it,
yeah.
And it's very evil.
Disney. Disney and evil go together like peanut butter and jelly. There's a movie called Miss Virginia. This one looks really intriguing.
Yes, this one does not look weird. Finally. This is a movie about a lady whose son is getting into, has all sorts of challenges. Mm-hmm. It looks like maybe in the D.C. area, either in Washington, D.C. or in Northern Virginia. Mm-hmm. She wants to send her son to a private school because, you know, between being bullied and the dangerous situation her son is being put in, mm-hmm. it's hard to escape.
Right.
Either he's going to be pulled down into this type of dangerous situation, or she's going to do whatever she can to get him out.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very interesting study. Mm-hmm. I think this is going to be an excellent film to watch.
Yes. There is a movie called The Passengers. This is a very intriguing story about the Ethiopian Jews that we don't think of very often. But when the Jews left Israel and Europe mm-hmm. throughout the 1940s. They went all over the world, and there's a band of Ethiopians who are of Jewish heritage.
Well, not only the Ethiopians, they're black.
Yeah.
And so to be able to get, they would like to be able to immigrate to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like that Israel is very open to going to many of the European countries
right.
or other places in the world to be able to help Jews get to back to their homeland.
As long as you can prove that your grandfather or grandmother was Jewish, you can get your visa for Israel.
Well, the families in Ethiopia are having much more of a challenging mm-hmm. time. This is their story.
Study of racism. Study of the difference between them and us. And disturbing. I look forward to that one. Okay, so let's the transition from that movie to Jay and Silent Bob reboot is coming to theaters on Tuesday.
It's going to have a skinny Kevin Smith, isn't it?
Yes, he had to change all the jokes. He had to change all the fat jokes that he had written because he had a nearly fatal heart attack, came back, solved his health problem, and then had to rewrite this script with taking out all the fat jokes.
So grab some celery, grab some carrots, and head over, maybe eat some hummus.
Uh-huh.
Head over to watch Jay and Silent Bob reboot.
Uh-huh.
That's a Fathom event, so there's only going to be a few showings. It looks like tonight, the 15th of October,
mm-hmm.
and also on Thursday, the 17th of October, this is going to be available.
And then they are taking this show on the road. They are touring the country with this movie. They are going to be at the Music Box Theater on Monday showing this movie as well.
Here in Chicago?
Yes, sir.
Oh.
So I am going to watch this movie at least a couple of different times. I love everything Jay and Silent Bob do. I love everything Kevin Smith puts down, with the exception maybe of Red State. I didn't love that one. And then the Walrus one, I didn't love that either. Okay, so maybe I don't love everything.
Steve, are there any Fathom events of shows that I can go to that are about a director that makes things really uncomfortable?
Yes. Speaking of directors who make people uncomfortable, on Monday, Fathom Events is bringing us Quentin Tarantino 8. The first 8 movies from Quentin Tarantino are in focus in a documentary that's coming to Fathom Events on Monday.
So they're going to be discussing all 8 of those films.
Yes.
Well, there you go. That looks very good, by the way.
Yeah. And then on HBO, there is a new version of The Watchmen coming. This is the comic book series turned into a movie that didn't do too great. Now it's being turned into a TV series on HBO.
All right, so the movie was based on the graphic novel by Alan Moore mm-hmm. and Dave Gibbons. The show that's coming to HBO is in the world that this is taking place.
Oh,
this is not based
not
off the graphic
story.
No,
this
is based on the world. There's been some jabber back and forth between, I think, Alan Moore and the director. The director says, I don't care what Alan Moore says, this is in the world. And a big thumbs up, F you. I mean,
wow. A couple of fingers.
Let's just say. So basically, the director of the HBO Watchmen series basically has said he doesn't care what Alan Moore thinks about this. Anyway, this may be interesting. And it's something that, I mean, you have HBO, you might as well pull it up and watch it.
There you go. brings us to our new segment that we are starting. Today is the pilot episode of a new segment on Too Much Scrolling, Adventures in a Black Box.
Steve, we go to enough live events. Mm-hmm. They deserve their own little area mm-hmm. to talk a little bit yeah. about them. So this summer, you watched Weird Al.
Uh-huh.
You've been to see Twice. Hamilton.
Uh-huh.
We've gone to a number of different types of shows that we've reviewed here.
Mm-hmm.
So this is an area we're going to try to review some of those live performances we go to see. I went to, Steve, the theater.
Oh, the Goodman Theater downtown Chicago. You saw a show called Bernhardt Hamlet.
Yes, and this is about an actress, a famous actress of the time. This is based off a true story. I think it's a true story. And this lady said, I've played all these women part. I've played them great. And I'm going to play Hamlet. And the critics laughed, of course. How can a woman play Hamlet? So this is a show that actually she is going to play Hamlet. And as the actors are kind of preparing for that performance, and everyone, the critics are laughing at her, they're breaking down Hamlet for you. So I think this is a show that a lot of people would enjoy because many times we go to the theater and we want to feel good about something, but we may not understand the nuances of what's really going on. And they're breaking down Hamlet. So they always break down and say, well, you know, this actor played this part this way, and this person said it this way, and this could be interpreted this way. So at the whole time, you're kind of breaking down William Shakespeare, his greatest play, Hamlet. At the same time, as a critics kind of come in and say, you know, this is probably not such a good idea. And she's stonewalling them. And she's having an affair with a famous writer in his own right. And he ultimately ends up writing Cyrano de Bergerac.
Mm-hmm.
And he has been given the task by her to rewrite Hamlet. And he is having a very, very difficult time with it. And ultimately, they start butting heads over this, and they start having conversations about this.
Hmm.
And he said, listen, I am not a writer like Shakespeare. And he's crumbling under the weight of being compared to Shakespeare.
One of the greatest playwrights of all time.
And that's exactly what he's saying.
Yeah.
He goes, this is good, and I'm a good writer, but I am not Shakespeare. So, I mean, ultimately, he has gone away. He is kind to, he has a deep attraction to this lady who is going to be our actress who's going to play Hamlet. But he's also married. And they have children. There's all sorts of stuff going on. But as he's gone away, he ends up writing Cyrano. He brings it back, or I'm sorry, well, it doesn't really matter. The actress gets a copy of this of play and goes through it. And her critique of this play, Cyrano, is the same critique she had for all the other parts that she's known for, these great women. She goes, well, they're women. All the men have the great parts. They have the great lines. If you don't know the story of Cyrano, it's the story of a gentleman who loves this other woman,
mm-hmm.
is trying to proclaim that love, but ultimately cannot find the words to do so. So Cyrano has this big, big nose that people make fun of all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got the words. And so he's feeding the lines to this kind of dull-witted person to feed to this woman. And she just kind of takes it. And this actress who reads this says, listen, I'm flattered you wrote this play for me. But look at what you've done. I'm still a person standing on a perch, and all the men have the great lines. So anyway, they agree to disagree. They separate. He takes his play. He goes elsewhere. It's a tremendous success. Everyone loves a comedy like this. And her play of Hamlet, I don't think, does so well.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very interesting study of theater. It's a very interesting study of breaking down the different stories going on. And then there's all the beautiful parts of the story going on as you watch it unfold. The actors did an incredibly good job on this. I absolutely enjoyed it. I was moved during the performance. And when you go to a theater, this is what you're expecting. I think the Goodman did a great job with this.
Is this a light story? Is this a fun story? Is this a comedy?
This is a comedy.
Okay.
I don't think it's light.
Okay.
This is not the Rebel Wilson film that we talked about earlier, but this is certainly not heavy. You're not leaving there like with this big weight that's been lifted or anything, but you are constantly being challenged in this, and it's the right amount of challenging.
Okay.
It's not so deep that you can't understand it, but certainly you're being enlightened because they're discussing these things that you know a little bit about. You know, may know more than you think you know, but they certainly are tearing it apart in a good way. I highly recommend this. Goodman did a really good job at securing this play for their audience.
Nice. And it's running through October 20th. You can go to goodmantheater.org to find more information about that show.
Book it.
Brings us to our book of the week. You got a chance to study, okay, you've studied a lot of great things in the last 5 years.
I have.
You've improved your existence, you've studied a lot of great things, and you have been focusing on some of the great courses.
The great courses is a service that basically you can go and buy a college-level course, and you can experience it. And we've met all sorts of wonderful professors from it. And you name a subject, you can learn a little bit about it. You're an adult. Go out and learn something.
Go out and learn something. That sounds familiar. That's what I close my morning show, my morning announcements at school. I close it with learn something. So, yes, learn something. Today, we are going to learn all about behavioral economics. You got through the great course, Behavioral Economics, When Psychology and Economics Collide by Scott Heutel.
He's from Duke University.
Okay.
So there we go. I'm from North Carolina. Duke's in North Carolina. What can I say? It's a local boy.
So you've told me a little bit about behavioral economics over the years.
Sure. And we read Richard Thaler's book. He's a University of Chicago professor. He won the Nobel Prize on behavioral economics. This is a story on basically psychology is probably where a lot of the best economic studies are going on right now.
Okay.
How you take information, how your brain works that information. You know, we are complex organisms, incredibly complex. The brain it's got millions of things firing at the same time. Yet we take all this complex information and our brain makes it simple. And we're very good at some things, and we're just terrible at other things. We overestimate the chances of things that are happening that are very, very unlikely. We underestimate things that we could control a lot better. But, we've got all these tools and to help us, discover maybe the paths are better than other paths.
And then you here are studying how that affects economics and how that affects decision-making and money.
Well, decision-making is the area that I'm interested in. And, I have a professional life, Steve, and it's not as a podcaster. But in my professional life, I work with a lot of people, and we're going through a series of questioning. And what we're trying to do is rank the values that we have. Some things are more important than others. And, many times people have different feelings on stuff. So, your value of something is very subjective. You feel very strongly that chocolate ice cream is the best ice cream. Now, somebody else may say strawberry or vanilla.
I love Rocky Road. Sorry, that's the name of a Weird Al song.
Okay, I love Rocky Road. I know that one. The point of that is, many times we have a very difficult time articulating that. We can kind of articulate it, but if you can articulate something better, and then also, if you're married, have a spouse who can also articulate what they want, many times you can come to a conclusion on it. These are the things that we would like to accomplish. And if you know the things that you would like to accomplish, what you can do is you can discard the things that are preventing you from achieving what you value most. And if I, as a person asking those questions, could lead you into a series of questions that could better help you access what your real values are, well, wouldn't that be a useful skill to have?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
What if you could talk to your students in a way, or communicate with your students, better word, in a way that would, meet them on a deeper level?
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, one student wants to be communicated one way, another person wants to be communicated another way. Another one wants to communicate in a different way. There's just different ways of leading us to, you know, trying to discover how the human body thinks about things.
And it's not about want. It's about need. The needs of my students, the way that I need to give information to them is different for every one of them.
Sure.
And behavioral economics is you're studying how to best package up the options for a person.
Well, it's a body of work. So that's one of the ways of doing that. So, you know, we can use computer models to help do some things that the human mind is, it's too complex for the human mind to really grasp. You know, one of the things that I was reading an article on this week was the chance of school shooting was like 1 in 600 million. Mm-hmm. And that's a very unlikely occurrence, a very unlikely occurrence. There may be other ways to address this type of situation that do not put people through the anxiety of going through something that is incredibly unlikely.
Right.
When you go and buy a lottery ticket, your chances of winning are so slim. Now, somebody may win, but you know, you're talking about chances of getting hit by lightning are
in the
far,
parking lot are, on the way to buy the ticket.
Are just greater than that. And your mind just cannot grasp that. Yet we have gambling all over the place. And it, you know, we're dealing with probabilities. Understanding probabilities would help us understand a little bit more about how these things work. So even if you are winning at a certain period of time, we know the house may have a greater chance of winning. And you go, well, I can switch some of these things around. Maybe you can switch some of the things around. But, you know, none of those buildings are being built on because, you know.
They're giving away money.
Exactly. So the point being of this entire course is it does give you some tools to kind of help look at probabilities, look how the human mind works, and then maybe how to ask questions better to better meet the needs of people. Certainly, this is a very skilled course. If you have interest in this, I would recommend it. It's not the longest course. I think it may be 8 hours. So it's one of the shorter ones that I've gone through. I'm going through one next. It's like 29 hours.
Okay.
So, certainly. But really, the way the great courses are established, they say 4 minutes a day, even you can get through complex information over the course of a month.
Interesting.
So very, very nice. Great I recommend stuff. This one.
All right. That's Behavioral Economics, When Psychology and Economics Collide. It's one of the great courses. You can find it on our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if you can come back next week, Steve.
Oh, you didn't call me gentleman in that time?
Well, I heard it causes a lot of commotion out there.
When you call people gentlemen... You need to back that up in some way. You called the Joker a gentleman, and our community just jumped on it. They were like, yes!
Well, was he a gentleman? Steve, he was an abused person. I was trying to be kind.
You were trying to be kind. And our Kevin Smith was certainly on the list of people that were like, really? You're going to call him a gentleman? And CF3 Podcast joined in. And of course, Stacy, our horror maven, she was in on this whole conversation.
Listen, the internet is so full of all sorts of stuff, Steve.
Everyone has an opinion. Good for us. It's a great community. Thank you, everybody, for being a part of our community. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Sleepy Chip Hessenflo.
We'll see you in the future.
Push the button, Steve!